You're listening to Freethinker Radio on 90.1 KPFT Houston, your home for uncensored news and underground music since 2011.
Welcome to Freethinker Radio. Yeah, welcome to Freethinker Radio, 90.1 KPFT Houston. This is Derek. I'm here with Micah. What's going on, man?
Oh, just enjoying life, watching the gas prices go up, paying attention to all the craziness, thinking like some of the craziness I have never seen before, but some of it I'm kind of shocked people are surprised by. So it's a mix, right? happy to be on KPFT. Heard that they actually have a new home down in the museum district. I guess we'll hear more about that and talk about that as time goes on. But we're always happy to be broadcasting in your 5 o'clock drive time on KPFT, as well as a slew of other platforms. If you're watching us on Facebook or DLive or any of these places, we appreciate the comments. We appreciate the engagement. We try to shout out the meaningful ones, let's say that. And we definitely appreciate the shares, because we think that these ideas that are being covered in the news ought to be analyzed, and our voices aren't the only ones out there. So we definitely appreciate hearing from everyone and having that engagement. So shouts to everyone paying attention.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you again to everybody who does support us. You can find our work at thehoustonfreethinkers.com. You can find out about our history. We've been broadcasting this show, Freethinker Radio, since summer 2011. So over a decade now. And we've been at KPFT, kpft.org, 90.1 in Houston for the last 5 years plus, now working with them. And that's exciting to hear that there's a new location. I hadn't heard that. So I'm looking forward to hearing more and more about that. And as always, we're going to start with a couple of Houston stories, a couple of Houston events, and then we're going to branch out to some things going on nationally. I wanted to talk about digital ID today and vaccine passports, something that maybe is no longer in people's mind as we're allegedly exiting the COVID era. Although at the same time, I don't know if you've noticed, Mike, I heard that there's all the same warnings about we're coming up to Memorial Day weekend and we're starting to see COVID numbers again. I heard Jimmy Kimmel, late night host, has it. And, you know, just these celebrities talking about having it again. So it seems like a familiar thing. So we'll see where things go. But either way, it seems like vaccine passports aren't really on people's mind again. We're going to talk about that, though, and just later half of the show, digital ID, how that all relates. And then we will get into some talk, as Micah mentioned, about inflation, because I think it's getting more and more real every day. And this is something that we've been talking about here on this show for years, since the beginning of the show, really, as it relates to our conversations around the Federal Reserve and things of that sort. And of course, when our show launched in 2011, it was around the times of Occupy Wall Street, and we were involved working, collaborating with Occupy Houston. And so these are issues that we've talked about for years. But before we get into some of those topics, I do want to cover a couple of events. Micah, you might have some you'd want to plug as well. The first one I want to mention just offhand is just a final reminder. We've been telling you about it for over a month now. It's called the Crimes Against Humanity Tour. It's going to be in Houston this Saturday, May 21st, crimesagainsthumanitytour.com. If you want to check out more about that, and you can find all of the details about the cost and the tickets there. But it is going to be featuring Dr. Judy Mikovits, Dr. Reiner Fulmick, Dr. Richard M. Fleming, and Patrick Wood, who we interviewed on this show, which you can find at thehoustonfreethinkers.com in our archives. Those four folks will be sharing their presentations, their thoughts around COVID, and the information they believe you need to hear about COVID that you might not be hearing elsewhere. And they've been on the road for the last few weeks here, starting in Florida and in California, Chicago, Phoenix, and then now coming to Houston before they go on elsewhere. And this is for a one-day event, so check that out if you're interested. Saturday in the Woodlands area in Houston, Crimes Against Humanity Tour, crimesagainsthumanitytour.com. That's one event that I will actually be attending as a media for this program here, and maybe by next week we'll have some interviews or something to share that I hope to play on the radio here. And then the second event is the following day, Sunday the 22nd. That is an event that this show is involved in, Visionary Noise, which is a project that Micah can talk more about in a moment, and House of Jay, which is Johnny's other project, the Houston Freedom Cell as well. A couple of different groups coming together for what we're calling Houston's Day of Community Solutions. And it is, as it sounds, just a 6 hours from 4 to 10 p.m. this Sunday afternoon and evening at the Garage Mahal at 3503 St. Emmanuel Street over there in the East End, over in the Third Ward. Houston, Texas. It's a very, very, very affordable event and going to be a fun event. There's going to be a guided meditation with my partner, Miriam Gomez. There's going to be some yoga with our friend, Brandy. There'll be workshops on how to get off big tech, discussions on how to build local successful community projects, discussion from one of our friends, Reba, who's been on the show before, talking about native plants and the urban foodscape. There'll be our friend, Mickey, who's been involved with groups we've worked with over the years for plenty of times, all the way back to the last Organic Outpost, talking about beekeeping in the urban environment. Johnny, who is co-host of the show, will be talking about running a successful community space. Mike Thacker will be doing a Wim Hof method breathwork kind of session for those who are familiar with that. And there will also be music from Johnny, Jack Sparrow, also a band, Houston band, True to Form. And then I'll be performing my music as 33. And then we have a few vendors that are going to be showing up as well. So it's going to be a really cool event happening again this Sunday, May 22nd, 4 to 10 p.m. at the Garage Mahal, 3503 St. Emmanuel Street. You can find it if you use Facebook by searching Houston's Day of Community Solutions. And you can find more info about that at thehoustonfreethinkers.com as well. So that's Saturday and Sunday, two different options. Anything you're getting into this weekend, Micah?
Yeah, I'm going to the Houston Day of Community Solutions. Yeah, that's the main thing I'm thinking about besides some work and stuff that I've got going on. I mean, there's always events. I know there's a important event coming up that I want to see real quick while we're talking. If you talk for a minute, I'm going to find it. But I don't think it's this weekend. Yeah. So I think those two are the main things that are on my mind. A lot of times, you know, we have people tell us about events, and if you've got events you want to have mentioned, and if you've been involved in this show before, we want to make sure we support the community. So, you know, if you got something important, let us know. Otherwise, we just, we shout out what we find and what we're, find interesting. So, yeah, we get, like I said, there's a lot of events always going on in Houston. And I see this one that's coming up a ways off with our friends Fuska, Ganesha, and more. So I'll bring that up either later in the show or in a future show. It's basically a birthday party for Liz, who makes pinatas and got written up in Houston Press for making these wonderful pinatas here in Houston. And they've been taking them to shows nowadays. People have been, getting a pinata from her for like a ska show or a rock show or just a birthday party, and I think it's been adding a little dynamic, a little active dynamic to a show. You can imagine Fuska playing and a whole bunch of people just tearing up a pinata at the same time. So, yeah.
Awesome. Very cool. All right. Well, keep us posted on that. And with that, we're going to go forward, guys, and jump into some news. Now you're listening to Freethinker Radio. We do this every week here on the Conscious Resistance Network and on 90.1 KPFT in Houston. We're going to do a few Houston stories, some local ongoing investigations into potential corruption, which I think is becoming more and more apparent as the weeks go on. And then I've also got one story about some police corruption out of Oakland, California, that I think is going to be important to talk about and to know about. So just stay tuned as we cover that. And of course, we'll be playing some new music tonight before we get into our discussion on digital IDs and vaccine passports. So let's jump into this first one, Mike. I got this Harris County preacher. Again, another disturbing story in this particular regard. You want to tell us about this?
The truth is, I don't really want to tell us about it. But the fact is, these are sort of the things that go on, and we've covered them before. So I feel like we'd almost be amiss not to. It turns out that a jury sentenced a Harris County preacher on Wednesday to at least 15 years for sexually abusing a young neighbor whose parent he befriended during Bible study. Conviction came after this individual faced decades of criminal allegations at a Houston middle school and at his county ranch. It turns out that this individual was previously convicted of indecency with a child while leading a religious ranch. And prosecutors also confirmed on Wednesday that he was let go from his role at HISD in the early 2000s because he was accused of sexually harassing children. Now, that's the main thing I want to talk about here. Check it out. He'd been accused. He already been convicted. And he's got roles of authority, for lack of a better word, both NHISD and within a religious context. So, you know, these are the places that people, you know, every, and this is the one of the reasons we bring this up, because often HISD for a lot of people in the world is their first interaction with the state. And for all we know, some poor child, they learned about, you know, institutions and HISD and alphabet soups from this guy, you know, who's accused of sexually harassing children. You could say, well, he didn't do it at HISD. Well, you know, it's a preponderance of the evidence that it seems like he's done it multiple times. It doesn't mean that he necessarily did it then, but he's done it so many times that it's hard for him to say, oh, I had nothing to do with molesting children during that time. So I think the main thing is everybody sends their kids to school in different ways. Some people homeschool, some people private school. Hopefully people do something more than just go up there on that parent-teacher night and meet each one for 15 minutes while they're on, you know, customer service behavior or something. And, you know, because, we've been on this show for 11 years, and I won't say that, you know, we've talked about this as much as we've talked about inflation and some of these other, you know, freedom robbing and value robbing things. But I think because it's so basic and so in everybody's life, that we must talk about it from time to time, especially in severe examples like this.
Yeah, I agree with you, Micah, and I'm glad that you, although it is never a fun conversation or something that we really look forward to in any way, it's definitely an important conversation to continue to have. And unfortunately, being in a city like the size of Houston, Harris County, the second largest county in the country, there are quite a few examples of these kinds of situations happening. Well, let's jump forward to the latest happening with Harris County Commissioner Judge Lena Hidalgo, who is she was elected, was one of the youngest, I think maybe the youngest ever elected in Harris County, and has this sort of allure about her as like a young Democrat who's out here to do good. And a lot of people really supported her. Now, I think she's coming up for re-election in this fall. And over the last couple months, we've seen situations unfolding where her three members of her staff, including her chief of staff, people very close to her, were indicted for allegedly, the evidence seems to be there, but allegedly till proven guilty, they steered a contract towards a specific contractor over more experienced contractors and gave this contractor who had never had any other experience before, who also happened to work within the Democratic Party and had other connections, an $11 million contract for COVID-19 outreach to this very small small Houston firm. And so that's been ongoing. And now Judge Lena Hidalgo is starting to speak out. Tell us about this, Micah. I got this first one pulled up from ABC 13.
Yeah, as you mentioned, you know, three of her top staffers were indicted. And you're right, you know, she hasn't been found, you know, irrefutably guilty. But at the same time, an indictment is, you know, especially from a grand jury, is something that's kind of serious, you know, and that's what they start with as evidence to pursue criminal charges. The news in it, though, is that four new search warrants in this case were unsealed and basically demanded that Google turn over documents that were accessed by her and by Lena Hidalgo and her staffers. The DA's office said, I believe that Google is in possession of electronic data, and that will show that these three named Dunn, Triantafylos, and Nader created, edited, commented, and or viewed multiple scope of work documents. This is what the investigators wrote in the search warrant. I also believe it is probable that the above Google documents were subsequently sent to Elevate Strategies founder Felicity on January 13th, 2021 and January 15th, 2021. And, you know, it's kind of, think about when that was in terms of COVID and what this individual was telling everybody. And did, if they're going to award this special contract, did they have an interest in keeping the narrative serious on COVID? And, you know, how much influenced what? Which is prior to the, anyway, let's keep going. Sorry about that. It turns out that this time is prior to the first public release of the vaccine outreach RFP on February 5th, 2021, and well prior to the first time a vendor could download a copy of the vaccine outreach RFP on February 19th, 2021. So, you know, this correspondence is happening before anybody could really get in there and, you know, as a vendor, compete and know the information to do with the outreach program. Hidalgo's attorney.
I think, I think it clearly shows preferential treatment at the least.
Yeah, I mean, if they're corresponding with them before the document's even published, I mean, that's a little bit suspicious. I mean, I'm not saying that it proves guilt by any means, but I think, you know, it makes sense that the investigator would subpoena the documents to find out what's being spoken about then. You know, if you're having an exclusive dialogue as a government official over here with somebody who has an entity that has no history, that you're about to give millions of dollars to for an unparalleled situation, right? This COVID, that at least, you know, due process, diligence of a DA's office or whatever you want to say. I don't believe that you should only, you know, prosecute people who are not in the government. Obviously, we've known for years that there's all kinds of nefarious things going on in the government. So it's good that at times that one arm or even the same arm of the government would take a reflective view on itself. So I don't understand. And with that being the case, you would think that, you know, maybe a judge would understand that. But she kind of goes on and says that that the news of this bond, of the bond violations, is merely a political exercise. Not that it could be someone doing their job and trying to find out if anything, you know, nefarious happened, but it's just a political exercise. She went on to say it's been a constant stream of leaks. What, of leaks? You know what I'm saying? I mean, you just got to ask yourself, what could be leaked besides the truth? Leaks of litigating this and out in the press, even when we were forbidden from responding, when this was supposed to be a process that happened within the courts and within the justice system, Hidalgo said, and called the allegation a, quote, distortion of the facts. And here's a quote that I just want to take a moment to focus on. She said, it's no coincidence that this is happening in the middle of my reelection campaign. Did y'all know that? That in and of itself should make it very clear that it's politically motivated. Think about that. She said, because of the time it's happening, the middle of her reelection campaign, that should make it clear that it's politically motivated and that it's meant to destroy and harm her campaign, to harm and distract me, Hidalgo said. And, you know, I think this could very well be, she's trying to make us all make this mistake with her, mistaking correlation for causation. You know, just because it's happening at the time that's inconvenient for her doesn't mean that it's just caused because of that. I mean, this happened a year ago. It takes some time to get the investigation done, to subpoena, to figure out who you're chasing down. You know, I think that's kind of a serious thing. And I think this is the type of stuff that when we do news analysis, we need to reflect on, because if we just think that she was trying to do good and we don't question it, and we don't get in there and we don't see some unpleasant facts from sometimes. And even if it was that she's all above board with this, her argument still has these things that look like strong fallacies. And in this one, you have basically a proctor hoc fallacy, a cum hoc ergo proctor hoc fallacy, with this, therefore, because of this. In other words, because it's here with it, this other thing must be the cause of it. That's like saying, oh, well, you know, I went outside and my cat got sick. Well, it must be because I went outside, my cat got sick. Everybody can see the problem in that kind of logic, I would imagine. But at the same time, you've got a judge trying to pass this stuff off to us to convince us that the only motivation in this investigation is political assassination. So either way, it's pretty serious stuff. It turns out that the DA's office is saying that the investigation's ongoing and that no one should diminish, degrade, or dismiss the hard work of grand jurors who spent 5 months on this investigation and determined that the defendants should be indicted for two felonies apiece. Each one got two felonies apiece that they're being indicted for. And who knows what else will be uncovered. So I don't know what you think about it, Derek, but I do think it's interesting, and I think the correlation between a shady contract and this politician's pushing of the COVID narrative is maybe not by accident.
Yeah, I definitely lean in that direction as well. And I thought it was interesting that they, you know, in this other article that we had pulled up, it's essentially the same story, but it was just one commenter saying that, you know, this is potentially a steel cage death match between Lena Hidalgo and Kim Ogg, you know, obviously in a joking manner, but just pointing out that it's unusual that she is kind of calling out this in the media. I mean, I heard again today on one of the other local radio stations, I heard Hidalgo giving a comment and saying this, like, you know, I think this is a political ploy from from Kim Ogg and she from the DA, and she's it's unusual, it feels like, to see them kind of play that out in the media. But nonetheless, we will continue to follow it. I do think that we are wise to, as you said, question, not just blindly taking the answers and accept, oh, okay, this is some young person, this is just politically motivated, she was doing nothing, they're just trying to make this, like, okay, well, let's actually be willing to look at the evidence, right? Because there's been cases in the past, maybe even the past year and a half, 2 years, where people were told there was nothing to see here about certain politicians, maybe even somebody under the name Biden, you know, involving emails and things of that sort. We were told that's disinformation, don't look at that. It's just political, you know, because I'm running for office or whatever. And that's, it's important for people to just use their own eyes, use their own ears, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Any other thoughts though, Micah, before we jump to some more local stories?
Well, I think it's a turn in a good way. And I think we need to ask ourselves, how much history of doing these sort of like political things does Kim Ogg have? I don't think we've covered one on here where she was going after an individual with an investigation where it seemed even remotely politically motivated. So in addition to the fallacious argument that I heard, you know, I also hear an accusation against the DA that I just don't see any substance put to it. It'd be different if they'd offered up like she did in this instance, you know, so I think that's important. And in the long run, I think if we want to if these people in government want to have anything to do with making life better, then definitely looking for the corruption in government is a good place to start.
Absolutely. Well, let's continue here on Freethinker Radio. I know you had one other one from the Harris County Commissioner Court. I just wanted to throw out there one about Fifth Ward residents, Fifth Ward down in Houston. I've lived in Fifth Ward before over the last few years when I was still living there. Fifth Ward residents living in cancer cluster call out mayor and state senators over campaign contributions from Union Pacific. This is a really interesting one. And it says that ever since the Fifth Ward cancer cluster was confirmed by the State Department in 2019, numerous city and state elected health officials have shown up to meetings declaring support for residents and promising to hold Union Pacific accountable for their decades-long contamination at their nearby rail yard. And if anybody's ever been over there on the East End or Fifth Ward, you know, there's rail lines, rail yards running right through the heart of that part of the city. And it says, but now some residents in the area feel they've been betrayed by those officials after learning that they've accepted campaign donations from Union Pacific. And they interviewed one resident who said, they say they're going to help us, but how are you going to help us when you turn your back? You're taking money. Members of the Impact Fifth Ward Community Group say they've recently received documents showing the campaign donations. The residents point out that Mayor Sylvester Turner, State Senator Boris Miles, and State Senator Carol Alvarado, who all attended a May 3rd meeting advocating for residents and calling TCEQ and Union Pacific to do more, basically saying that they all have received money. And it says that campaign finance records from Texas Ethics Commission show that from May 2020 to February 2021, Alvarado received a total of $9,500 from Union Pacific Fund for Effective Government. Mayor Sylvester Turner received $6,500 August 2019 to December 2019 from the same fund. And then the Senator Miles received $7,500 between October 2019 and September 2021. So it's just some people kind of, I guess, trying to call out that and have some accountability. And the mayor of Houston, Sylvester Turner, said the following: Mayor Turner has been steadfast and proactive in his fight on behalf of Fifth Ward residents. Promising residents he'll fight the company to ensure appropriate cleanup is one thing. Actually doing it is another. Mayor Turner is doing it. To insinuate the mayor of the city of Houston would do anything less than stand side by side residents fight for Fifth Ward goes against the facts, his history of public service, and frankly, where he chooses to live today. And then they kind of go on just saying companies are free to donate wherever they want, but his record shows he's standing up for the people. And they've got different statements from the other elected officials, but, you know, you can decide what you want to believe. The point is, I just want to give these people a chance, boost their signal. People in the Fifth Ward of Houston are trying to say, hey, we don't like it. Something stinks. Something doesn't add up. So glad they're getting their voices out.
It's another one of those situations where you know, you could just pay attention to the data, you know, and find out what's going on. And it shouldn't be a big problem to have the conversation. And there's lots of ways that people could be involved in this without realizing it. They could be complicit, right? They could be accepting funds, and maybe they're not working overtly by saying, okay, I just approved more chemicals to be dumped here or something. But perhaps they're not working aggressively to solve a problem. And, you know, I could see how perhaps the mayor's office could try to say, you know, we never do anything against Fifth Ward residents. Well, that's true in that overt manner. We wouldn't approve to put more, you know, it could be true in that way. But that doesn't mean that you're, you know, doing something to make it better either. And I think that's kind of how they, you know, how politicians can sometimes say things like that. And we need to really kind of slow down and look at these responses sometimes, because in a way they're saying, you know, they're demarking a field of which they believe they're effective.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Did you want to hit this last story, Micah, on Houston? I think you have Harris County Commissioner's Court.
Yeah. And I really appreciate all our, listeners from beyond Houston. I know KPFT has a really broad reach down out into the Bay and Livingston and beyond. And if you're there, it's good that you are hearing some of the things that go on here. If you live far away and are paying attention to us on one of the apps or on kpft.org, you know, perhaps there's some analogous things going on in a town near you. But this I kind of, you know, I thought was interesting. It turns out that the Harris County Commissioners approved a $53 million for countywide trailway projects. And there's a lot of little things in here, and I don't know how far out we want to get with it, but let's just get the facts out. It turns out they have this project, and they dubbed it Towways to Trailways. It will add 236 miles of active transportation projects, according to the Toll Road Authority's planning document, which was basically in Commissioner's Court May 10th agenda. And no timeline's been announced yet for the implementation. Most of the planned trails will be placed adjacent to existing toll roads, providing, you know, basically, just think about that. They're going to be put near the toll roads, providing access to existing parks, public transit hubs, schools, and neighborhoods. The request was approved in a 3-2 vote, not a huge majority, right? With Precinct 3 Commissioner Tom Ramsey and Precinct 4 Commissioner John Cagle dissenting. Ramsey voted against the item because the project has, in his words, too many unknowns. He told a local newspaper in a statement on May 17th, safety is my number one concern. I've not seen enough of the concept to competently say it's properly been addressed in these projects. And I thought, okay, that's fine. But I thought Cagle's negative vote had a little bit more to say behind it. Cagle said he would have preferred additional trails to be funded by the county's parks budget. Precinct 4 said, one of his representatives says, while Commissioner Cagle is a major proponent of hike and bike trails and has considerably expanded their availability throughout Precinct 4, he voted against this measure because he believes it sets a bad precedent of diverting toll road money to projects not originally envisioned when toll roads were first pitched to the Harris County voters. In its planning document, the Toll Road Authority identified 22 planned projects as quick wins or projects that were ranked as having the highest community benefit and were given prioritized timeline. These projects could cover a total of 65 miles and cost an estimated $131 million. Some of the most expensive quick win projects include a Space Center Boulevard Trail, a west extension to the Cy Creek Greenway, and an A-Leaf East Loop project. Combined, these three projects would cost an estimated $48.3 million and cover land in all four county precincts. The remaining 41 tollways to trailways projects would cover 171 miles and are predicted to have later completion dates. And you're going to love this one. And according to the Toll Road Authority's plans, we've seen how their plans have gone so far in these toll roads, right? According to their plan, it'll only cost $470 million. And, you know, I think about it a little bit, you know, and I'm think about where the county Parks Department has to get their funding from versus, you know, toll roads. So I kind of thought it was important to mention, because I think sometimes these bonds, these different things that people don't think so much about, where's the money come from when they vote for it? Because it sounds good, right? I mean, who doesn't want more paths and bike paths and, you know, nature trails and just the ability to get outside and enjoy Houston in the good weather. I'm not against that in any way, but I can see that being questionable where the money that pays for it comes from. And if it perpetuates, you know, kind of a what's the word for it? Vampiric? No, what's the word? You know, a system that is less than efficient or less efficient than another one, then yeah, that needs to be weighed out, because there is a Harris County Parks Department that's supposed to be taking care of these things, you know? So I don't know. It seems like it'd just be an expansion of a little bit of that toll road authority corporatism. And
yeah, you know, it's crazy.
Sustain themselves.
It's just crazy to me, Micah, to hear the numbers that are talking about. They're like, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars. Or that just seems like so already just in the insane amount, right? But then at the same time, that's Harris County, right? Then at the same time, just in the last week or two here, the city of Houston put forward their budget for $5 billion, $5 billion. And then right just now, as of I think today, both the House and the Senate of the U.S. government have approved $40 billion aid, you know, aid weapons package to Ukraine, which is expected to be signed by Biden. Just the amount of money that is being just shifted around. And that's your taxpayer dollars, funds coming out of you that they believe you are the debt. You are, you know, pledged to pay the debt for the rest of your life. And that's how they fund these things. I mean, it's just
meanwhile, working people have a hard time gassing up their car and going across Houston. I mean,
exactly. We're going to talk about. We're going to be getting into the inflation in just a little bit. I mean, not to cut you off there, Micah, but definitely we want to get into that, because that's part of the other side of it, right? Is that why they're doing $40 billion aid packages? And yeah, maybe you might like the trails, like I said, Micah, but you think about deeper about how it's happening. And then at the same time, $5 billion budget for this and this and hundreds of million dollars. It's just, I don't know. I keep thinking about I said this before recently on the show, but I keep thinking about this, Tupac lyric that they got money for war, but they can't feed the poor. You know, and that one's just, it was true in the 90s when he wrote it, and it's even more true now. I want to hit one more headline real quick before we jump to our first song and come back and dive into digital ID, which I think is going to be really important. There's a few headlines I want to hit and an article I wrote, actually, that I just want people to really understand how this vaccine passport, digital ID, facial recognition stuff, it's not going away. And in fact, it's growing. And then that'll lead us right into central bank digital currencies and the inflation talk. So I want to cover all that today if we have time. But this one right here, I just want to mention at least, of course, all the links will be at thehoustonfreethinkers.com. This is one that is about police corruption and apparently a former police officer trying to do some good. And then having, you know, facing retaliation and now facing a whistleblower, what they're calling a whistleblower retaliation trial. It says former Oakland police chief takes stand in whistleblower retaliation trial. Ann Kirkpatrick claims she was fired for reporting corruption within the police commission. The city of Oakland says Mayor Libby Schaaf was allowed to fire her for any reason or none at all. And I'll just read the first paragraph or two here. It says, it says right here that former Oakland police chief Ann Kirkpatrick grew up in Memphis and she was exposed to police corruption early on. And she said she decided she wasn't going to put up with it. Quote, I made a decision about which path I was going to take. I was going to try to be one of the good ones. She testified on Tuesday in her whistleblower retaliation trial. And then on cross-examination, attorney Jonathan Bass suggested, quote, that this sense of righteousness may have colored her perception and caused her to assume corruption where there was none. So basically what you have here is that the city of Oakland, which is being represented by the law firm Koblenz, Patch, Duffy, and Bass, in this lawsuit against former Oakland police chief Ann Kirkpatrick, they're claiming that she was fired, you know, because she's just sticking her nose in place, I guess, and that she's imagining things. He said that this sense of righteousness is like making her think she's seeing corruption, where she's saying that she was blowing the whistle on abuse of power and misconduct within the police commission, a 7-member civilian body, which is established by voters in 2016 to oversee some department policies and review officer misconduct. So this sounds like it was a commission that was created to deal with already existing corruption and you know, police officer misconduct. And then the police chief tries to say, hey, I think that this police commission is not really being done in the right way. And she was, I guess, subsequently facing being fired. She said, quote, this is what she told the jury. To report misconduct is not an act of betrayal. It is an act of integrity. I acted on that integrity and I came forward. I had a right to not have retaliation and I had a right to be protected. And instead, I was actually terminated. So that's just, you know, I'll leave the rest of the details, read the article. It'll be at thehoustonfreethinkers.com after this show. But I do think it's worth noting, right? Those kind of things that you don't really hear in the headline. There's a former police chief in Oakland, which is, you know, it's a pretty major city, well-known city, speaking out and trying to say, hey, there's corruption within our department, within this specific commission, which was designed to root out misconduct. And now, you know, having to prove herself in court. So I'll be interested to see how that one plays out.
Yeah, I definitely think that's one we need to keep up with. I'm glad you brought that one here. And I think it's interesting that she said, you know, she made this conscious decision. And maybe if they're saying, you know, she saw corruption all around, who knows how severe it is? I mean, there's been a number of times here on this show where we speculated about links between things. And then, you know, it comes out to be the case. I mean, I don't know. I don't live in Oakland. I haven't done much digging, but we'll see. We'll pay attention.
Yeah, we'll follow it. We'll be right back, guys. I'm going to play you one of my songs. This is my music video for Reflection. And while I'm here in Houston, I'm hoping to record a new music video that will release this summer. But in the meantime, this is my only music video at the moment. It's for a song called Reflection right here on Freethinker Radio. We'll be right back.
To understand who we are and where we fit in the natural order of the world.
33.
The people who have created this system and they perpetuate this system, they are out of balance.
I woke up this morning feeling I had something to say. I got doubts on my mind, it's time to let them fly away. It's time to unlearn poison and heal broken hearts. Go back to the end, it's time for a fresh start. This is the place we can atone for our sins. This is the place where our hero's journey begins. A space between love and hate, where there's no escape from our fate. Rather than be irate, let's create, let's build. The better world we know is possible. I've got no fear, cause we can overcome any obstacle. I stare all my demons in the face, I'll show you what's possible. I send love from my heart, I'm intuitive, not illogical. It's just that lately I've been searching for deeper meaning. I'm sick of drugs, booze, mindless sex, and criminal scheming. Feels like I should have more at this point in time. I'm talking knowledge, not money, I'm trying to feed my mind.
See, we are power. They deal in violence and repression, we are power. They tell us, they want us to believe that we are powerless.
I hope you hear these words from my mind, from my heart to your ears. We only got one life. Let's do something with it. Open up all three of my eyes and fly to the heavens. During my meditation, I see my life in chapters of seven. I connect to my inner child to heal my wounds. I recall those I've lost to dope gone too soon. My life flashes before me, a collage of joy and pain. I recall the highs, the lows, I swear I'm going insane. I'm trying to wrap my mind around this journey. Spent too much time worried about things that don't concern me. No more time wasted, not chasing my dreams. I wake up every day knowing this world ain't what it seems. We gotta make our own path, we gotta find our own meaning. Cause we can't be sure, we might be dreaming. All I know is, when I look in your eyes, I see myself. I'm just a reflection of your impression of my higher self. Could it be that our whole reason for being, our existence, is a lesson to teach us over and over until we get this? You are powerful, you are beautiful, and you are free. Shake off your chains, you were blind, but now you see. Grandfather, help us remember where we come from. Grandmother, walk with us until this battle is won.
Extension of that natural energy, that natural energy which is spirit and which is power. That is natural power. And just as it takes millions and billions of elements to make a blizzard to happen, or to make the earthquake, to make the earth to move, then it's going to take millions and billions of us. We are power. We have that power.
Oh, that's great. I really enjoy hearing the music and hope everybody riding in their cars is enjoying hearing the music and thinking about it. If you find it out there, I guess you could find it on YouTube for sure, right?
Yeah, it is on YouTube. It's also on Odyssey and on SoundCloud.
If you just video.
Search video. 33 is here and you can find it.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. I know that's the kind of thing that I used to see more of that stuff going through my feed, just like creative rappers and such. Maybe you could call them I don't know, people talking about what's going on. I don't see so much of that going through my feed nowadays. Maybe it's my choices. I don't know. I tend to doubt it, but I think that that'll probably catch with some people. So it also, you know, I think it's fitting contents wise to a song to be play on here. We play a lot of different music on here, and you know, you can reach out to our page. You can reach out to any of us and send your music to us. I do really enjoy it when we can find, you know, contentful songs that the lyrics, the message also fits with something that we might speak about. So if you got one of those, kind of like give us a little extra star on it and say, hey, I think this would really fit with you guys. I might even be willing to come on and talk about it. We've had numerous musical guests from platinum recording artists to, you know, people that busk here in the streets of Houston. So I think that's a very important aspect of this show. And whether it's Derek's music or someone else's, we want to always serve that sort of creative artist that's addressing these things that are going on both in our hearts and our spirits and politically in the world, in societally, however you want to say it. So that's an important part. You can email any of us. You can email visionarynoise@gmail.com. So, yeah, that being said, KPFT is all about, you know, getting the local art out.
Absolutely. Well, so let's go ahead. We got about 15 minutes or so left with you guys today. Again, Freethinker Radio, find us at thehoustonfreethinkers.com. I've got a little bit of a news blast here, Micah, with some digital ID headlines, but feel free to jump in anywhere. I'd love to get your thoughts on this. We'll start with the U.S. We're going to look at Asia and then Iran and then Australia. So very different parts of the world, but all sort of similarly, you know, promoting similar schemes. So buckle up, guys. First one let's dive into is in the United States. You guys might remember that Florida was one of maybe the only states, or at least one of the first states, that actually passed or, you know, initiated a ban on the so-called vaccine passports. Now that ban is going to be heard in a federal appeals court. This is being reported in the Miami News. It says Governor Ron DeSantis and other Republicans took aim at so-called vaccine passports as they push to end COVID-19 restrictions. But Norwegian Cruise Line Holdings has other ideas. After the cruise industry had been sidelined by the pandemic, that Miami-based company wanted to require passengers to show documentation that they had been vaccinated against COVID. Norwegian Cruise Lines filed a federal lawsuit last year challenging the state law banning vaccine passports. U.S. District Judge Kathleen Williams agreed with the company's arguments that the ban violated the First Amendment. And I don't know how it violates the First Amendment rights of a company, but that's where we're at. And what is known as the Dormant Commerce Clause of the U.S. Constitution, and issued a preliminary injunction that applied only to Norwegian lines. And she wrote in August that the law was, quote, a content-based restriction on speech as it targeted documentation but allowed businesses to request other information from customers about issues such as vaccinations. So some like legalese going on there. But here we are today. The state took the case to the 11th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, and a panel of courts will hear the arguments Wednesday in Miami. So this article I'm reading here might even be a day or two old. I don't know if we got any final statements, but it says in a brief filed at the Atlanta-based court, DeSantis' administration attorneys wrote that the vaccine passport law was a, quote, economic regulation that does not implicate the First Amendment. The brief that they wrote said, quote, the law simply prohibits businesses from conditioning service on customers providing documentation certifying COVID vaccination. Norwegian may still request that documentation from its customers. Its customers may voluntarily provide it, and both parties are free to discuss the topic. What Norwegian may not do is deny service to customers who fail to provide that documentation. So that's kind of their argument there, and we'll see how it does going forward. But that's just one development that, for one, again, just because the conversation around COVID is seeming to be out the window, or you're not really hearing so much about vaccine passports at the moment, you know, don't assume that these things are over, that this is over by any means. So that was one, but bigger, and I think more, maybe a little bit more in your face, is what's going on in Asia. I don't know why this is happening particularly at this moment in Asia, but this is what it's appearing to be. This one first is from Vietnam Net. More than 14 million people received COVID-19 vaccine passports. This is like just happening. A Ministry of Health announced that it has issued more than 14 million COVID-19 vaccine passports to the general public a month from its official rollout on April 15th, which is when these vaccine passports started to roll out on this digital ID system. And for those who are watching online, you can see this. It's a phone with a QR code, and it's in Vietnamese, and it's the Vietnamese
it's called PC COVID-19. It's a digital app or digital health. And the vaccine passports have 11 fields of information, including name, date of birth, nationality, the targeted diseases, the doses of vaccines received, the dates of vaccination, the lot number of the vaccine batch, the type of vaccine product received, the manufacturer, and a code for certification. And this data has been encoded into a QR code, which will expire after 12 months. And following that, they will be notified and a new QR code will need to be created. And so, so they're just talking about how this is being rolled out now. And they're claiming that they've got 14 million people to join in the last month in Vietnam. So that's happening, right? And then I started to look more into this, because why Vietnam, right? And then I found this other one, Micah, from Channel News Asia, which is obviously news based around most of Asia, Southeast Asia. And so the ASEAN, A-S-E-A-N, for those who are unfamiliar, this organization, I can't remember what it stands for off the top of my head. I don't think it has it listed here, but it's basically, you know, the Asian nations, like they're one of their sort of organizing parties, like sort of like NATO or something like that. I don't think it's military based specifically, but they all agreed to work towards mutual recognition of COVID-19 vaccine certificates to facilitate smooth travel. This is health ministers and officials from these member states on May 15th agreed to work towards a mutual agreement of COVID-19 vaccine certificates. This was made by different member nations at the 15th ASEAN health ministers meeting in Bali, Indonesia. So yeah, this is just, and all the nations involved, let me see if they have the full list here. It includes
ASEAN means, that acronym stands for the Association of Southeast Asian Nations.
That's what I thought. It was perfect. Thank you, Micah. So yeah, so a big chunk of the nation. Do you have a list of the nations?
That's what that I'm reaching for.
Member states, maybe. But yeah, so I mean, that's it. And I have another one more, just while you're looking for that, Micah. This is related to the same thing. And this is from a travel website, which I thought was interesting. But this travel website called Travel Off Path, it makes note just today, 10 countries in Asia plan on introducing a vaccine passport for travel. And they kind of go through, you know, what's going on. And they talk about Thailand, Vietnam, different regional areas, and how they even say this is kind of interesting. They're like, implementing a mandatory vaccine passports would most certainly add to the woes of both unvaccinated and restriction-wary vaccinated travelers, while making the dream of a full Southeast Asian reopening unattainable. And so they're basically saying, like, there's not going to be a full opening, because it's going to be all these different countries requiring vaccine passports of different sorts. And as this section here says, vaccine certificates are becoming the norm in Southeast Asia. So far, Asian officials have not yet established how their system for mutually recognizing each other's vaccines or their health passports will be put in place. But as I just noted a moment ago, they all agree they're working towards that goal.
Yeah, definitely. Some of the bigger nations in ASEAN include Indonesia with a population of 274 million, Thailand, 70 million, Singapore, an economic powerhouse there, the Philippines, 110.5 million, Vietnam, as you mentioned, Myanmar, Brunei, Cambodia, Laos. It's a pretty 10 nation, big block.
They're not some small, insignificant nations. They do
673 million people in total, more than twice the U.S. in terms of population, all those people. And their GDP is 10 billion.
Yeah. Well, let's continue the conversation. So we're talking about vaccine passports. They're trying to ban them in Florida. Now they're dozens of nations across Asia agreeing to roll them out. And what I've been saying, I think we've been all saying on the show since the very beginning, way back, if you remember back in spring 2020, when the World Economic Forum was the first organization to put out a video discussing how these things that we'd never heard of called vaccine passports could be the key to returning back to normal. And we've been warning that the vaccine passports in a big way are just kind of a gateway towards a digital ID, which you can go back a decade ago when films like From Freedom to Fascism were warning about this sort of digital ID, everything interconnected control grid. And so I just wrote an article this past week that I'd encourage you to check out. I'm just going to read a couple of headlines from it. It's called Exposing the Digital ID is a Human Rights Scam. You can find it at The Last American Vagabond. Of course, it'll be listed in our show notes at thehoustonfreethinkers.com as well. And what I do in this piece here, the kind of focus is to introduce people to this idea that, well, for one, I've been noticing, as maybe you have, Micah, and other people out there might have just seeing that this idea is being seeded into our minds that people who are the so-called unbanked, the, you know, these poor, you know, Indian villagers or Mexican villagers or villagers in Thailand or Southeast Asia who don't have bank accounts and don't have IDs, that, you know, they're being left behind by the digital divide. And the answer to this is we need to make sure that they have some form of legal identity. In most cases, they're promoting a digital identity, and they're also promoting that of being on a blockchain. And then that, you know, can help them get digital birth certificates. And basically this idea, which I think is an assumption we need to fundamentally question, that, oh, you've got government documents, now you're a real person, now you're a legal person, now we can count you and you, you know, this and that. But they're trying to sell it in this way of it being a human right, that this is something people should fight for. You know, you're a real person, you deserve digital ID. And so in this article, I kind of look at the root of some of that messaging, and it goes back to the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals and the 2030 Agenda, aka Agenda 2030, which are a collection of 17 interlinked objectives adopted by the United Nations in 2015, which they claim is about ending poverty and protecting the planet. But as I think many, many people are starting to suspect, is about something else, or at the very least is about usurping national sovereignty in order, you know, to push in United Nations and World Health Organization and other supranational bodies to give them power. And so one of the Sustainable Development Goals of the United Nations is number 16, which is about talking about peace, justice, and strong institution. And part of that goal is, quote, by 2030, provide legal identity for all people, including birth registration. And of course, they use lots of buzzwords and flowery language to make it sound like it's, you know, it's going to be the best thing ever. But I think we should question that. And that's where this idea that digital identity is a human right, it's really coming from the pushing of these sustainable development goals, and that we need these goals in place in order to, you know, create a better world, fight climate change, etc. And so I talk about how this world plays very much into the hands of people like the World Economic Forum, pushing for the Great Reset and pushing for a world that is totally digital, digital currency, digital identity, things that they can track. And I go through here as well, giving examples that there are some organizations who have been pushing back, including the Center for Human Rights and Global Justice, which wrote a piece called Everyone Counts, Ensuring that Human Rights of All Are Respected in Digital ID Systems. And then there was even others that were a little bit more bold. There was an organization I found called Privacy International that directly said the Sustainable Development Goals, identity and privacy, does their implementation risk human rights, and talks about the danger of these kind of identity schemes. And then I get into the World Economic Forum, United Nations, and the World Bank, and how the World Bank is trying to fund these kind of projects, including where I live in Mexico, $225 million loan given to one of the Mexico cities to try to implement these sort of digital ID schemes. Then you got the ID 2020 project with Microsoft and Gavi, the Global Vaccine Alliance, which is funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and the Rockefeller Foundation. So you got everyone from the World Economic Forum, the United Nations, the World Bank, the Gates Foundation, the Rockefeller Foundation, all pushing towards this kind of meme of digital ID is a human right, digital ID is necessary. And I go further into the article and kind of looking how I think this is sort of, you know, another layer of digital colonialism, if you will, colonization.
Did you say that they were getting them to borrow the money for their own papers, please? Like, to that you were saying that in Mexico that they were the people advancing these ideas and the World Bank and such was trying to get the people's government, the people's, you know, representatives to borrow money from them to put these shackles on them. I mean, to
absolutely. Yeah, that's
and to pay and for their own.
let me give you one or two quick examples, Micah. We're running low on time here, and I know I want to hear your thoughts on this. I'll just read it. We don't even have to show it on screen. Look, in relation to what we're talking about, digital IDs, all this stuff, and relation to the inflation and to the prices, people being, you know, difficult. There's been soaring bread prices in Iran. There's a lot of causes we could talk about it. People claiming provocateurs. But the point is, the people cannot get their bread. Costs are going up. Protests are being triggered. Riots are being triggered in some cases. But this is what I wanted to share. The government plans to offer, this according to Reuters, the government plans to offer digital coupons in the next couple of months for limited amounts of bread at subsidied prices. The rest will be offered at market rates. Other food items will be added later. And of course, to get that digital coupon, you have to have a digital ID, which is part of a new system that Iran's been rolling out. In addition to that, I will mention again, I was talking about Australia. what is it? New South Wales in Australia announced that they're going to do a digital ID system, a digital birth certificate program as part of a digital ID push. That was also something I talked about in my article, how a lot of these programs are talking about. We need to get kids to have digital birth certificates right from birth. And then MasterCard announces now they're going to have a new form of biometric payment system. So you don't even have to bring your card anymore. They're going to keep a record of your face if you decide to go this route. And when you're walking out of the store, you just smile at the camera and it will go ahead and deduct payments from, you know, from your account. So those things are already now like on the table from from MasterCard. And as I was mentioning, there's these things going on in Australia. This stuff is out there. It's happening. I mean, this is very much a part of our world now, and it's happening, I think, a lot quicker than many people realize. MasterCard introduces controversial biometric payments that requires a face scan. New South Wales begins digital birth certificate program as part of digital ID push. Iran introducing digital coupons for digital IDs for bread rations. I mean, this is a scary place that things are headed. I think this is why it's so important to me to, I don't know what I can do other than sound the alarm or try to have the conversation. I'm not sitting here claiming to have the perfect solution or want to tell anybody what to do or what, but these people are preparing for this. I had another clip. We don't have much time to play it. Maybe we'll play it next week. The head of the Bank of International Settlements, which is the central bank of central banks, saying that, you know, the reason they want to support digital currencies is because it gives them the ability to control. He complains that with $100 bill, you can't track that. With $1,000 peso bill, you can't track that. But with central bank digital currency, you can track that. You can control that. So that's my digital ID rant, Micah. What do you think about it? I mean, you know about this. We've been talking about this for years. Like I said, freedom to fascism.
You talk about things happening faster. That means the consequences of them are going to happen faster. So that's the thing I would start to really consider seriously. What are the consequences for you as an individual, for society, et cetera, for different levels of life for these things, you know? And what are the consequences of, you know, being excluded, of not being able to buy or sell without their, mark, without their passport, without their thumbprint on you from birth? I don't know. I think it's a curious thing. Everybody's going to make up their own decision. Some people will be taking their children up to that right away, you know, and saying, yes, this is what's best, you know, and they'll be able to keep all kinds of information on them all through their life. And, you know, it's kind of like the human capital in a way. You know, there's a lot of information that'll be gained from people just being on such a system. I think, you know, obviously we need to spend more time on this. I think the thing to think about is, if you're concerned about this, what are the consequences of it? And what does that mean? And what do you got to do to deal with those consequences, no matter where you sit on this issue?
I think considering the consequences is important, as well as just everybody thinking about how everybody's going to make a different decision about how we interface with different types of technology as we're moving quickly into this world. And everybody's got to decide, you know, do you want to be the kind of person that scans your face so you can go through the store and walk right out? Some people have already opted to scan their face to open the phone or to open their house or whatever, right? Everybody's going to choose a different path. But we hope at least you will consider these things and think about this. I encourage you to go to thehoustonfreethinkers.com and look at those sources. Every news article we've covered today will be there, but everything we just covered in that little digital ID section, go look it up and don't trust my word for it. Check out my ID, my article about the digital ID being a human right scam, and just checking that out and see what you think for yourself. That's what all we're trying to do is present information to all of our listeners at the Conscious Resistance and on KPFT and say, think for yourself, make up your own mind. And let's find a way through all this. That's all we got for today. So anything else, Micah?
No, it's a lot of serious stuff on the show. It's been a great show. I appreciate everybody's comments. I see we had a Canadian who was, you know, sharing the show and talking about good stuff early on. And I do appreciate everybody. And I just hope you do think about, you know, things like, what are the proper role of government? When is force necessary and when is it justified? Because that's what we're talking about. And I hope that you will take the time to think about consequences of these actions and think about, you know, what else did we talk about? The review of politicians. But mostly take time to empower yourself and empower your loved ones.
Peace, everybody. We'll see you next week.
over. So messed up, I couldn't care. We gather round, put something in the air. Under the bright lights, your beauty inspires.